Hello everyone, welcome to minute 117 of season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the early podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is good friend Hal from so many different podcasts, but most recently the October Sky pod. So welcome back to the show,
Hal. Thank you very much, Rob. It's good to be back. These are fun.
Yeah, always fun talking about John McClane and everyone around. Yes, indeed. So minute 117 begins with Simon's shirt getting ripped and ends with a lot of soldiers getting ready for a standoff. So we ended things yesterday with Simon and Katya getting very comfortable with one another. And you know, this minute begins as she's like ripping his shirt. I've never understood that in movies, why they do that, why people, you know, will rip people's shirts when they're getting ready to have sex. It just doesn't make sense to me. You know, why right. Ruin the shirt?
Just take it off. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and that way.
Exactly. You can take the 30 seconds to, or even less, you can take the 10 seconds to either take the shirt off or unbutton it or whatever it is, you know, instead of just, I don't know, I guess people, they're trying to show in movies that people are, you know, they don't have the patience to wait. They just right away. But again, right now, the fact that she's ripping his shirt, I don't know how that really helps with anything here, except for the fact that later on, he doesn't have a shirt. That's the only thing that does. So whatever. If anyone out there has a true guess, feel free to let us know. It could be anything. Who knows? The shot changes and we're back into Hal's expertise, you know, with the helicopter. And, you know, we see the guys working on the helicopters and one of them screams, "Lights, douse those lights." And, you know, they're looking around, they hear sounds of a helicopter above and stuff like that, which I like the way that they do this, you know, the mystery of it all, because, you know, we don't know what's about to happen, you know, and just the way that they leave this open, you know, that you have the hearing some sort of sounds that they should already be very familiar with, you know. Like you as an aviator, again, I don't know if this is true or not. Can you tell the difference between different planes based on the sound?
A lot of them, yeah. Now sometimes they've got to be pretty distinctive, and bear in mind too that there's you know, there's sort of whole categories of, say, airplanes in particular out there that might have the same engine and same propeller, and that's really what's responsible for most of the sound. Coupled with other context clues, you know, if I hear a particular engine and you know, sort of prop sound, there's a pretty long list that I, or, you know, any of my nerdy airplane friends could identify. I'm just trying to think of an example. If I hear a Rolls-Royce Merlin engine, I'm gonna know what engine that is, and then I'm gonna tell you I bet that's a P-51 Mustang, because that would what would be the most quote unquote common around here to fly with that engine. But it could also be a Supermarine Spitfire or a Hawker Hurricane or the Havilland Mosquito with an engine out, or anything like that. So I guess I have to say, yeah, I can do that a lot. In this case, the sound that we're hearing is, you know, is of the Bell Jet Ranger helicopter, and they're fairly distinctive, but they would sound like the Gazelle and the Jet Ranger would sound pretty similar, sort of similar power plant, similar, you know, rotor size and everything. Now a UH-1, the classic Huey, there's nothing else that sounds like that. If you heard one of those, you'd know that helicopter in a heartbeat. And I would say the same with the bigger Chinook and things. And as a kid, I mean, those would fly over the house. I always knew which one.
Oh, wow. Even as a kid, you knew the difference between them?
Hearing, and, you know, kids obsess over things, so maybe everybody else was collecting their baseball cards, but no, I was, you know, studying airplanes and helicopters and that sort of thing. But yeah, I could always be inside and then, you know, and then yell, oh, there's a Chinook going over. There's two Chinooks going over. Everybody run outside. Sure enough.
And did your friends appreciate this? Or did they say, oh, how's the nerd who knows about planes?
I would say it was a healthy mix of both.
Okay. That's fair too. That's okay. I come on. As a kid, everyone years later, you know, here I am, a 50-year-old who's still like that. You know, like most times when someone will mention the name of a movie, I could probably tell them what year it came out and information about it. Most times, not always, but you know, it amazes people when I correct them. You know, they'll be like, "Oh, I saw Back to the Future in 1987." I'll be like, "No, it came out in 85." And like, no, I'm pretty sure it was out in 87. Like, no, it came out in 85. Right. Yeah. So yes, I had a similar thing. You know, it's I remember in my yearbook that they had, you know, in high school yearbook, they had a last will and testament of what they, you know, what every student, you know, they would give them theoretically. And what they gave me was a movie that he's never seen, you know, which.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Again, obviously, 30, how many years has it been since I graduated? 33 years later. It, you know, hasn't changed much. But that's fine. I enjoy that. And that's, you know, so and anyone who doesn't like that is their problem.
Exactly.
Right. So, right. So you have these guys, you know, looking up and trying to figure out what it is. And they give us a panning shot that shows like a few other mechanics that are there or whatever, looking up. And you see a sign that looks really, really weird because it does not necessarily look, I wouldn't say it's hand painted, but it also doesn't look as if it's, if it was made professionally. And it says on it, right. Milwaukee Crane. And it has like the serial number and things like that. It's a little blurry, so you can't really tell exactly what that is. But I actually looked it up to see if there really is a Milwaukee Crane Company. And it's currently known as M&M, Milwaukee Material Lifting. Okay.
Okay.
And let's see if you can guess what state it's in. And your first guess will be wrong. And your first guess will be wrong.
I have to say, I'll confess that I cheated a little bit because that got me curious too. So as a transplanted Wisconsinite, you know, the normal answer should be Wisconsin.
That's right. You know,
the town of Milwaukee. But as I understand it, they're actually based in Oregon.
That is correct.
Which is, you know, the part in the Pacific Northwest, which is closer to where I lived most of my life. And there is a Milwaukee, Oregon, as well. But I was under the I've got this thing in my head that says that the town of Milwaukee, Oregon, spells it differently. They spell it K-I-E instead of K-E-E at the end. But I can't swear by that. That one I'd have to Google.
Right. Okay. I mean, I can even give it a little bit of history of the company. So the Milwaukee Material Lifting Company was founded in 1945 by Italian immigrant Gabriel Pachuzzi as Milwaukee Machinery in Portland, Oregon. The company was located, and gives the address, doesn't really matter. The company sold and repaired electric motors, pumps, transformers, and with its machine and welding shop was able to repair all kinds of industrial equipment. In the early 50s, the son of the founder, Arthur Pascuzzi, saw the need for adding the product sold by his father's business. Manufacturing was a more appealing prospect than repairing old equipment. Milwaukee Machinery always had a good reputation for quality work, and the manufacturer of overhead bridge cranes looked like a good opportunity. Building the best became our motto, and we did it. By the late 60s, the crane manufacturing part of the company had outgrown the building on Macadam. In 1970, that was the name of the street that they had. In 1970, the crane division relocated to a large facility in the Portland suburb of Tigard. The name of the company was changed to Milwaukee Material Lifting to identify with our product lines. Milwaukee Material Lifting now has 55,000 square feet of manufacturing plant and is served by four large capacity bridge cranes. You've got to have cranes to build cranes. Milwaukee material lifting has grown and changed over the years. We've adopted advanced technology to continuously manufacture a better product. We've also expanded our product lines to better serve our customers across the broad range of applications and industries. One thing has remained constant throughout the years, our uncompromising commitment to quality and customer service. Building the best remains our motto. Skillful engineering and effective manufacturing assures that each crane conforms to the highest standard of safety and performances. Papa Pachuzzi would be proud. So I just thought that was a nice little cute story that they have about this company. And, you know, I wonder if they know that they were aiding and abetting terrorists in 1995.
Yeah, and, you know, when you talked about that sign, you know, it doesn't look like sort of, you know, something sort of commercially done that would be on there. But I would think it would have to be, because otherwise what would be the justification for the filmmakers to label this particular crane as a Milwaukee crane?
I don't know. Maybe one of the filmmakers or one of the guys in the art department, set decoration and stuff like that, like you and me have, you know, as a kid had a hobby of cranes and said, hey, if you're going to put a crane there, you got to put it as Milwaukee crane.
That, you know, stranger things never have happened. That's right.
I know. That's why it might work. I don't know. And I mean, it's a great panning shot, the way that it all is moving around, you know, and we can see that they're in a huge warehouse. And then the camera shot quickly moves to one of the windows where we see lights, you know, coming into towards the window.
Right.
And we hear the helicopter sounds, you know, and unfortunately, not all of us like Hal know what type of helicopter it is by the sound, but we know it's a helicopter, you know.
And it's great the way that's done, because it's intimidating, and it puts you in the POV of the bad guy, at least just for a moment there, of saying, we're inside this building, but now there's this noise and this blinding light coming through. And it's, you know, if you were on the sort of receiving end of that, if you were hiding out in this building and then that happened, that would be a scary moment.
Yeah, because you also don't know. I mean, it adds to the suspense and anticipation. Also, the music starts playing in suspenseful ways also, with the way that they do it. I like the way that they do this. It's done very well. And, you know, then they close in on one of the windows from the inside, and they see the lights of the helicopter getting closer and brighter through the whole thing. And then we see Simon basically push himself up, I guess, off of Katya
yes,
as he's looking out the window. But again, the continuity here is good, because you see that his shirt is ripped. And once again, it's ripped in a way that it just doesn't make any sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's obviously there will be no use for this shirt ever again after Katya had her say by ripping apart the back half of it. And then, you know, we see, I guess it's supposed to be Simon's line of sight outside the window. And, you know, it gives us a shot of the whole area. And then we see the sign saying Nordeligenes.
Yeah.
Which is, it says north of the border. You know, it switches between English and French. And then it also says Quebec's largest truck stop. So we're going to go back again to the whole idea here of this plot. I'm trying to understand the plot here. You know, John knows that this is the place that they're at because he saw that it was stamped on a bottle of aspirin. Okay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
As great of a detective as John McClane must be, you know, I don't even think Sherlock Holmes would be able to figure out that just because you have a stamp of where a prescription was filled or where you bought something, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's where you're going back to. You know, like, why would John have assumed that?
Yeah, it's, I think, one of a few pretty big leaps of logic in this movie. But yes. What kind of movie would it be if the terrorist got away, or if somebody who wasn't John McClane caught him?
True, but again, the idea here is, you know, why? Like how do you get from one point to the other point? Now, in the alternate ending that they filmed, so they showed that it's a few months later and that John has tracked down Simon. You know, it shows that John used his good detective work in order to finally figure out where Simon is, you know, and we know it's months later.
Oh, interesting.
It's not like the following day. You know, here it's the following day or the same night or whatever it is. So again, it's just a little strange as to how, you know, if I were to give you something and you would see a return address on it or whatever it is, right? And it's not my return address. You wouldn't say, oh, well, that's where he must be because, you know, that's the return address is written on here, or that's where he's going now or something like that, as opposed to that's where he was at the time. You know, that's the big question I have here. You know, they somehow got across the border with all of this gold that nobody had to, nobody looks like when you're crossing the border, they don't open up the truck to see what's inside.
Yeah. You would
forget about the fact that we talked about this a few weeks ago, that we don't know how he was able to get the gold off of the ship without Targo knowing. That's a separate problem. Okay, but here it's okay getting it across right. the border.
Yeah, you would think that the worst thing that you could do would be to attempt a border crossing. You know, you think, let's get it on a ship or, you know, or an airplane or and get it into something where we can get to, you know, some, you know, more. Just some other part of the world, at least, and sort of get in quietly. Correct. But yeah, you're imagining, just, you know, do you have anything to declare? No, I don't have billions and billions of dollars of gold with me, and
that's right.
Any customs agent worth their salt and is going to look at this quantity of stuff, and they're going to want to have a peek,
and also see how many trucks are probably going right. through. You know, it's not as if it's just going to be one truck. Also, and they've gotten rid of the dump truck. You know, here they're using semis, but still, that's a lot of gold to be somehow getting across the border for this whole thing. But oh well, that's what we have here. That's what we have to deal with. You know, we get the tense music also, and you know when. Simon, and then he looks to the right and he sees a whole bunch of police cars also. And then, you know, John apparently has the spotlight of the helicopter shine right into the room where Simon is. Again, John did a really good, did amazing detective work figuring out over the last 30 seconds, you know, that Simon and Katya are getting it on, you know, in this particular room for him to find them.
So and before we dive back in, is it okay to talk about who's in the helicopter outside?
Yeah,
yet,
sure. Or sure. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, I know you've talked about it before on the show, but it's really interesting to me, this, you know, the other ending, and I get why they changed it, because the pacing and things of a Die Hard film, you know, you expect it to get wrapped up, but that idea of giving, you know, McClane some X number of months to solve these things and figure things out and, you know, and eventually determine where they were holed up, in so many ways would have made it more plausible. But as it is, it's just the chase is on. And as, you know, we're about to see, you know, here's Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson in this American helicopter, and they've apparently just flown right into Canada. There's no, doesn't seem to be any acknowledgement of, that I recall, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, of them sort of clearing customs, much less having any kind of law enforcement jurisdictions in the other country, which would be completely out of the question.
Right. I agree with you on that, but there's also the question then about maybe he's now working with the Mounties. Is that possible?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I certainly would have notified them, but I think even still,
No, like the question is, do we know that is a helicopter a New York City police helicopter? We don't see that in particular.
we don't know if it's a New York City police helicopter, but it is an American registered helicopter. So
Okay.
that's very, very clear. You see the N number, that N73 FA or Foxtrot Alpha on it in one shot. And interestingly, that registration number, it's a little unclear as to whether that was legally applied to that helicopter. I think it was, but the FAA reports that N number was on a different airplane, presumably after this helicopter, and then is on yet a third aircraft now. So if this, a couple of things could have happened. Number one is they could have just been, if they're shooting in Canada, they may have had a Canadian helicopter, but decided to put a bogus American registration on it, because it is interesting. The FAA, normally when you search for a number like this, they'll say this is what it's currently on, but it used to be on this and this and this, but it only lists one other aircraft prior to the current holder. So it's, I don't know, that's, it's kind of interesting to me. Now the Internet Movie Plane Database does show that helicopter and with its N number, and it does identify a serial number, which means that somebody somewhere probably saw a registration. But where it gets weird is, so right now it's on an airplane called a Sportsman GS2. It's a home-built airplane, which is kind of part of my daily world, based in Seattle, as it happens. And then it says before that it was on a Beech 18 that was, whose registration was canceled in 1974. But it doesn't mention the helicopter, which would have been in the middle of these two things. So in 1974, this number was taken off of this Beech 18, and I believe that was a crash. And then in 2013, it was issued to the Sportsman. Now, the helicopter, I believe it would be a late 70s model, that Bell Jet Ranger that you're seeing there, the Long Ranger. So it very plausibly had this N number on it, and that makes more sense than the filmmakers putting it on there, because they normally don't care about that sort of thing. It's just very peculiar that the FAA doesn't list it now as one of the two former holders of that number.
Well, I mean that's why we wanted to have you on this, so you could tell us about these things.
So anyway, so at least I've identified that there's a little bit of a mystery here. But again, it's interesting, because you mentioned, we don't know if this is an NYPD helicopter or anything else, and you're absolutely right. And I think to any sort of normal person watching this, that registration wouldn't mean anything. So I don't know if that's meant to be, if that's meant to tell us sort of in canon that yes, this is an American helicopter, or if it's just that's what was painted on the helicopter they hired for the shoot.
Interesting. I guess it could be either.
Yeah, okay, very well could be.
I guess we will never know.
Right, we may never know. Another interesting thing about the helicopter, when you look at that kind of hero shot at around that 36-second mark, is so that's where you get a good look at the N number, a good view of the thing overall. If you look on the skids, there's a couple, I think maybe three on each one, these sort of these gray like cylinders that are sort of lashed to each skid. And that's not super common to see on a helicopter, other than in certain areas. But any guesses what those gray cylinders are?
The only thing that I would be able to guess is that maybe they are fuel tanks.
So that's a reasonable guess, but actually no, those are emergency floats. So this helicopter is not considered amphibious as configured, but if it is over the water and needs to ditch, those will inflate and it and become floats, so it can actually land on the water, but really only in an emergency.
Oh wow!
So it's, you know, there, I don't know if it's CO2 or whatever sort of explosive cartridge they have, like on a life vest or something. So you're the equivalent of kind of pulling the string, and then these pop open and inflate.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah.
So now I'm realizing as we're going so deep in here on this helicopter, I may have missed sort of the forest for the trees a bit. And that is, it's also, you know, not every helicopter in the world has this blinding spotlight on it. So the fact that this helicopter has the spotlight on it, I think at least maybe suggests to us a little bit more strongly that, this is probably just NYPD or some other law enforcement agency that we're supposed to think that. But it is interesting that they didn't put any specific sort of markings on it or anything else. But again, I think they're thinking, you know, these two people are in a helicopter and that's how they find them, and everybody should just shut up and stop worrying so much about it.
Well, seriously. Wow. That is just... You see, again, that is why we have Hal on these shows, just to be able to tell us these things, because I wouldn't have done this. You know, there's a red and white sign on the side of the helicopter, which to me looks like a medical sign.
Oh yeah, let me scrub back to that. I think
you can see it also at 36 second mark.
Yeah. Yeah, it really. Yeah, that's a great point. I think that's exactly what that is. That's the there's sort of the shield, and then you've got the I never know how to pronounce it, but it's the that sort of intertwined snakes, which we've all decided means medicine. So I think that is supposed to be precisely what that is. Interesting that and not entirely outlandish that a sort of a medical helicopter like that would have the spotlight for finding, you know, places to land and things like that. But
especially when you have Zeus on board.
Yes, exactly. You've got Zeus on board. So anyway, that's curious stuff about this helicopter.
Yeah. And then things, you know, we get another shot of Simon, who looks really, really pissed that he is being interrupted, literally, with what he's doing. And then, you know, he like moves forward a little bit, and then we see Katya underneath him, you know, quickly pull out a gun and, you know, turn to the helicopter and start shooting at it. And she shoots, I think, five or six bullets at the helicopter. Not very effective from what she's doing, I guess you could say.
Right.
And then, you know, we hear John's voice say, "Hey, Dick, did I come at a bad time?" Which, again, I don't know. It's a strange comment for John to be making, you know, here about this whole thing. And, you know, then... at that point is when she starts shooting at him, and then we hear Zeus's voice saying, "Whoa, I think she's pissed at you, McLean." Now, I'm going to ask a question that's going to come up quite often over the course of the next few days. Why the hell is Zeus there? In what capacity is Zeus helping out in this particular situation? You know, he's an electronic repairman. Who happened to spend the day, you know, jumping through Simon's hoops, but that doesn't necessarily give him a free pass in order to join and take part in everything that's going on. So I'm a little confused about that one, but you know, I, it's because it's a buddy cop movie, and you need to have him there.
Yeah,
that's the best answer you can give.
Yeah, it's, I think, the only real answer, because the sort of in-universe answers just defy, I think, any kind of remotely plausible explanation. And, you know, the number of times throughout the film when Zeus could have just walked away and, you know, threatened to more than once, you know, they sort of keep adding these semi-tenuous threads to sort of keep them around, but an interesting choice overall to make this a buddy movie. And you know, what are your thoughts on that? Or they just think that Bruce Willis needed some a foil to work with, or
well, again, I mean,
we've
talked about this numerous times about the fact that the script of this movie was an original script called Simon Says, and in that script it called for two characters. You know, that's what it came down to. And when they wanted to create a script that deals with you know, make it part of a franchise, the original idea was to put it in Lethal Weapon. And then after that, when they realized that that wouldn't work, they decided to, you know, give it to us, you know, as a Die Hard movie.
Right.
So it's a bit strange, you know, the whole thing. I'm actually glad that they decided not to make it part of the Lethal Weapon. And I've said this numerous times that the main reason that I think it wouldn't have worked as well in it as a Lethal Weapon movie is because the characters already know each other very well. Here, the whole premise is that these characters don't know each other. And that's,
sure,
you know, they grow in each other through the course of the movie.
Yeah, you wonder, you know, how different it would have been, as you said, if the characters had just known each other the whole time with Riggs and Murtaugh at that point. That would have been, it would have been just another sort of rollicking adventure for those guys. There wouldn't have been that arc at all of any kind of development or growth.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, again, I like the buddy-buddy aspect of it because Zeus and John are great together in this movie. There's no question about that. You know, they work so well off of one another. They have great chemistry, everything like that. But again, it's not something that would have worked in numerous movies. You know, it works just for, it wouldn't have worked in a sequel. It only works in this particular case because of the fact that they're getting to know each other, which then once again raises the question, why is Zeus here? Because in the alternate ending that we've discussed, Zeus doesn't appear in there because, again, John is moving on to do the detective work by himself. He doesn't need Zeus to do it with him.
Yeah, that's a great point. But some movies hold up when you start asking the big questions, and others falter a bit. And I think this one is the latter.
Yeah, for sure. But again, it's still fun seeing him, and I think that's the point. That's what we need here.
Right, we need fun.
Exactly, and then the helicopter does a maneuver to get away from the shots. Then we're back to Simon's lieutenant, who's blowing on a whistle, and all the men come running. They start opening up crates with machine guns in them. They throw machine guns up to other people on the top of the trucks. You know, they're really, everyone's getting ready for a fight.
Right.
Which again goes back to your point about them having to get through customs, getting through with these crates.
Exactly.
I don't know if that was so simple. But who knows?
And let me ask you this, and forgive me if this has come up elsewhere in the show, but I'm thinking probably not. Does the guy need to blow the whistle that many times?
Maybe he's. I don't know. Maybe that's the signal. You know, if he just blows it once,
it seems like, okay.
If he just blows it once, then it doesn't mean anything. But if you blow it six times or whatever, I don't remember the count of how many it is. You know. And not only is the whistle, he also says go, go, go at the same time. So
right. Which, that's the go, go, go thing is it's kind of its own trope in movies. And you see that in, you know, all over the place. You've got, it's not enough to see a bunch of guys running. It's, you know, if you have somebody there yelling go, 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 or standing off to the side and slapping each one of them on the back as they go past to sort of hurry them up. And I think the whistle is sort of the same sort of thing, but it's like, once he's blown it a couple of times, everybody's lined up and running and going to the crate and getting stuff. Do they, I think they all know to hurry at that point, but I guess this guy's been waiting who knows how long in his career to be the whistle guy, and he's going to blow it no matter what.
Seriously. Yeah, that I guess that's his job.
Yes, he's the whistle guy, and
that's right.
He's in charge of blowing the whistle. To take that away from him. Yes,
that's correct. Right. Okay. And that's actually all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute before we get into today's segment?
No, I think we've covered it quite well.
All right. Excellent. So once again, the script, nothing to talk about here because it does not appear. So we will not be discussing the script once again. But so every Tuesday, we have a segment called Trilogy Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five movie trilogies. I'm very lenient on the way of what everyone wants to call a trilogy. So, feel free to be as lenient as you want.
Okay. Well, I am going to tax you just a little bit because there seems to be six entries in my top five. If math isn't my strong suit. So if I can start with number six, or we'll call it honorable mention.
There you go. Of course.
If you let me get away with that one.
Honorable mention at the bottom is no problem. If it was honorable mention at the top, okay, it's more of a problem. But at the bottom, no.
Yes, definitely at the bottom. So honorable mention for me goes to Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is old Universal classic monster movie from that I remember, catching in black and white. It would have already been 20 years old at that point, but seeing that as a kid, if it comes up on TV, and I think I saw the first one in 3D and with the red and blue anaglyph glasses on a re-release. It's a very much a product of its time, but I should be ashamed to admit, but won't, that it still scares me to this day. So there's my honorable mention.
Wait, so it scares you in a way that you want to watch it, or it scares you in a way that you just avoid it?
Oh, no, I still love watching it. It's a good scare. It's just, okay, oh, cool, look at that creepy monster. I'm scared. It's a good scare. And at number five, I've got one where the trilogy's included because of how much I love the first picture. I think the second two are okay, but I think the quality went down. But that's The Naked Gun. So Leslie Nielsen and the Zucker brothers and Jim Abrams, or at least some of the Zuckers, they may not have all both been involved, based on the tragically short-lived TV series Police Squad.
Yeah.
Which I think my friend Mike and I were the only ones who actually watched that when it was on, and then got excited when they made the movie. Number four, another case where the first film, I think, outshines its successors pretty dramatically, maybe very dramatically, and that is RoboCop. But the original with Paul Verhoeven directed first film to me is an absolute classic. Then I put in number three, I've got the Christian Bale Batman trilogy, unlike some of the others, I think all three films are just about equal. I think they're beautiful and such a wonderfully grounded version of the Batman story. Although I do have my loves among all different eras of Batman. Number two, Back to the Future. Number three, the third film, Back to the Future 3, is not my absolute favorite, but I've softened on it a bit. But for me, one and two, how they dovetail together, was just pitch perfect filmmaking. And I don't think number one is going to be a surprise. You mentioned you're lenient about what constitutes a trilogy. Obviously, there are, nine major films and a couple of ancillary things and a zillion other series and animated this and that. But for the first 9 years of my life, there was no Star Wars. Then for the next, what does it work out to be, about 21 years of my life?
No, 16.
Let's see.
16
years, right. So from 83 to
99,
episode one. So, yeah. So until I was let's see. So, but overall, for 31 years of my life, there was either no Star Wars or it was strictly a trilogy.
There you go.
So the original trilogy, absolutely, you know, just that was the first thing in my life. I think until that movie came out when I was 9 years old, all of my interests and passions and hobbies and, you know, just personal tastes were something that I had shared and kind of gotten from someone else in the family, my dad, my mom, my two older brothers. You know, it's like my one brother and I would bond over this, the other brother and I would bond over that. And this was the first one that was just mine, first and foremost. You know, my brothers appreciated the series and a bit, but just didn't really get into it. But man, I was hardcore. And, you know, here I am now, 46 years later, 47 years later, and it's just as powerful today.
Wow. Yep. What a great list. Thank you very much for that. Okay, so Hal, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Hal Bryan?
Absolutely. You find me on social media at Hal Bryan. If you want to go back and listen to a complete podcast series that my friend Jim O'Kane and I did, you can find the Rocketeer Minute anywhere you get your podcasts or at rocketeerminute.com. Currently, as we're recording this, Rob, we're in production, kind of late stages of production on the October Sky Minute. And we've got about a little more than half of those episodes are released, about 2/3 to 3/4 of them recorded. So you can check that out, the October Sky Minute or octoberskyminute.com. And you can also hear me periodically on my work-related podcast with EAA, and that is The Green Dot. You can find that at inspire.eaa.org, or again, anywhere you consume podcasts, just look for EAA's The Green Dot. If you listen to an episode of The Green Dot and they talk a lot about banking, that's the wrong show. Even though their logo looks a lot like ours, it is. There's apparently a Green Dot Bank out there that has or at least used to have a podcast. So I've never listened. I'm sure it could be a wonderful podcast. Just don't listen expecting to hear me or to hear anybody talking about airplanes.
Well, maybe there's some connection between, you know, finances and airplanes. You know, we were talking about, you know, being able to rent or buy a helicopter. So, you know, maybe,
right. Yeah. There's a pretty direct connection, and it's sometimes a fairly depressing one.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes. But
yes.
Exactly. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay. Everybody
comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.